Welcome to the Leadership Journey Podcast. I'm Alan Wilson, the host of the podcast. Each week, I'll be chatting to various Christian leaders, discussing some of the things that have contributed to the story of their leadership, and at the same time, encouraging you as you listen to reflect on your own leadership journey. If you've not already subscribed to the podcast, you can do so for free on iTunes or on Castbox. Just look for the Leadership Journey Podcast, and it would be great if you were able to take a moment to leave us a review. My guest this week and next week is Charles McMullen. Charles is the current moderator of the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. Enjoy the podcast. Charles, welcome to the Leadership Journey Podcast. I appreciate you taking the time. This is a particularly busy year of life for you, isn't it? Because you are the moderator of the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. So what does that mean for non-Presbyterians who are listening? What exactly is it? Are you kind of a Presbyterian bishop?
Yeah, somebody said to me that for a year you're very definitely it, and then your exit. Basically, you're the church's principal public representative for a year. You get to attend all kinds of functions. That might mean going somewhere to open a toilet block. It might mean going somewhere to dedicate a new facility, open a new church. There's the opportunity to represent the church by going to visit people who reach their first century.
Yeah, I mean, I know from seeing your Twitter account, you seem to have quite a lot of centenarians. It's not infrequent.
It's a very good time to be a Presbyterian, Alan, I would say. I remember one visit in particular. We went along to visit a 109-year-old in Ballymena, still living on her own. Her name is Maud. And she told me in the course of the conversation, a lady full of faith, and she told me that as a child she had learned Matthew 5 to 7 off by heart. So at the end of our time together, I decided to read the Beatitudes. Each one I started, she finished. She didn't realise that I was reading the Bible. And then at one point she said to me, "You have a very good memory, just like mine."
That's great.
You're the church's principal representative. And then, of course, you chair the General Assembly during the first week in June, which is the church's main parliament, as it were, bringing together elders and ministers from all over Ireland.
So it's more of a representative role. It's not like the Anglican structure where there's a bishop, but you don't really have any more authority than anybody else.
You don't have very much power. In terms of influence, I don't know what the answer to that is. Certainly you can set the tone. And each moderator chooses a theme. Mine has been building relationships. Christ's love compels us, because relationship would be very much at the core of who I am.
Well, presumably, I mean, you mentioned some, you get to travel around and so on. It must give you an opportunity to have a fairly wide-angle view, I suppose particularly in the Presbyterian Church in Ireland, but also the wider Christian church across the island, does it?
It certainly gives you a bird's eye view. And I have to say that as time has gone on, I've had a renewed passion for the Church of Jesus Christ in general. Really seeing the local church as the hope of the world, that sense in which local communities full of people whose lives have been radically transformed by Jesus Christ, that sense of being countercultural. We look around at society, which is so broken and fractured, a society that is so aggressive in many ways, and where the volume has been turned up with all kinds of things happening politically or not, as the case may be. And yet here is this community of God's people that can make such a difference, and the sense that we are not isolated as congregations, but belong together to the greater whole. And I suppose Presbyterianism is part of that. We're not on our own, but we stand together.
I think one of the things that strikes me about that, just from your own personal experience, is it's tempting from the outside to think of, you know, you eventually, somewhere towards the end of your ministry, reach this, you know, position of being moderator. But you're talking about it very much as something that sounds to me that's going to energize you for going back. I know that you're young enough still to have several years left of local church ministry. Is that how you're experiencing it?
Yes. It happened 3 or 4 years ago. it's happened a few times, folk suggested to me that I let my name go forward. Mm. I very quickly kicked that to touch.
Yeah.
But when it resurfaced a couple of years ago, I thought, that feeling deep down inside, Lord, you're asking me to do something. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what. Sometimes we get these tests of obedience along the way to prove the worth of what we already have.
Yeah.
And I let my name go forward, not knowing that I would get any votes from our presbyteries. First time round, I was runner-up. That is quite often the case in our system.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had no good reason to pull out.
Uh-huh.
So when this happened, I suppose really I saw it in many ways as a wonderful opportunity, a privilege, but a bit like a career break as well, because I've been Minister of Bangor West since 1999, and it's an opportunity for me to be refreshed, to find out what's happening in the wider church, and maybe bring back some ideas to my parish ministry.
Okay, great. I think we'll come back to that maybe towards the end of our conversation. I'd like to come back just and get some of your perspectives from observance, you know, observations that you've had of across the church and across the island. But let's go back to the early years. You're a County Tyrone man, isn't that right?
I am,
originally,
born and brought up in Oma, the county town.
Yes.
You don't have any County Tyrone babies these days. Maternity hospitals are located elsewhere, so I'm one of a dying breed now.
Really? So people will go to Alton McElvin or
Enniskillen or somewhere else.
Oh, yes. Right, okay. Craigavon,
so you're looking at a breed that will be extinct in a few years'
People born in County Tyrone. So growing up in Oma then, was church a part of that growing up family life?
It certainly would have been.
Yeah.
I'm an only child. Mm-hmm. I don't have any brothers or sisters. Mm-hmm. And my parents took me along to the local Presbyterian church, Trinity Oma.
Mm-hmm.
My first minister was a man called Harry Pinkerton, mm-hmm. who used to tell Sunday by Sunday to the children these stories about a character called Wee Johnny.
Uh-huh.
Wee Johnny became very much me in many ways. Sometimes he did what was right, sometimes he did what was wrong.
It was a fictional character.
A fictional character.
Uh-huh.
In the days when there wasn't any psychology, we had our Sunday school meeting in a room called the Wee Johnny Room, so that felt very comfortable to me in a place where I was very definitely at home.
Mm-hmm.
Wee Johnny really taught me to love Jesus.
Wow.
Very simple stories. Mm-hmm. I can tell you one of them. He'd been working very hard, and his mummy and daddy decided to give him a present. What would you like? Wee Johnny decided that he would like a pen, so they took him to what would have been a pen shop, whatever that was, and they got him this pen. He brought it home and he wrote with it all day. That night he had a dream, and in the dream there was a big pen in the pulpit looking down at all the little pens in the church, and the big pen was telling all the little ones that they had to be guided by a good hand, they had to be kept clean, and they needed to be filled with ink. And then next morning when he woke and came downstairs, told his parents the dream, they explained it to him that you and I need to be kept by a good hand, we need to be kept clean, and we need to be filled with the love and joy and peace of Jesus.
Oh my goodness.
So Sunday by Sunday we would feast like that. Yeah. I was always really disappointed when, for whatever reason, my minister was away on Sunday and a stranger was in the pulpit.
Uh-huh.
And I would have been quite indignant because that minister wouldn't have heard of Wee Johnny.
So he didn't get the story.
A sense of identification.
Yeah. And so that's a sort of quite an early awakening to faith then, really.
Yes. I can't remember a time in my life, really, when I didn't know Jesus.
Yeah.
I can remember reading a Sunday school present about the life of Jesus. It was a paraphrase of the New Testament.
Yeah.
And crying when I came to the crucifixion scene, becoming very personal to me. I can remember as well my minister coming to visit us at home and asking me what I wanted to be when I grew up, and I said that I wanted to be prime minister, meaning minister, but his reply was obvious, there's no harm in aiming high, son, is there?
Well, some people might think the moderator is the prime minister of... you maybe got your dream.
Maybe better than Prime Minister, because you only have to do it for a year.
I know. You kind of wonder sometimes what, you know, as we're speaking, kind of wonder what our Prime Minister, why she would hold on to a job like that, which causes so much pain. But we'll not divert down that particular route. As you grew up in the area, were there people that influenced you, helped to nurture your faith, or begin to point you in directions of where your life was eventually going to go?
Sunday school teachers mainly, and then my second minister, a man called Bill Clark, mm-hmm. took a real interest in me. And I suppose looking back, that was a kind of mentoring role. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And for some strange reason, when I was chatting to him at church, I suggested that I might like to read the lesson uh-huh. one Sunday. Uh-huh. He phoned, asked me to do that, and I made all kinds of excuses. My mother overheard the conversation, told me off, made me phone him right back and say sorry. And I found myself reading in church and then becoming a Sunday school teacher, and then maybe doing the occasional children's address or leading children's day. I can remember.
How old were you?
Well, in my mid to late teens.
Really?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Probably more mid-teens. Yeah. And I can remember my heart absolutely pounding, being beyond myself with nerves.
Yeah.
And yet there I was. And he probably helped a call to take shape uh-huh. in my life. Uh-huh. Was very much there. Looking back, he spent an incredible amount of time, always seemed to be available, always mm. helpful, always full of good advice.
Did you find that he do that for other people who were of similar age, or do you think he'd spotted something in you that he wanted to nurture?
He would have been willing to talk to anybody. He was always incredibly gregarious, people-centred, a very big pastor's uh-huh. heart. But for some reason, we developed a relationship.
Yeah. Would you, I mean, looking back there, obviously the speaking in church, you know, that's a sort of, in a way, it's a forerunner of what you've eventually gone on to be doing. Were there other things that would be related to leadership? Were you the kind of person that found yourself leading things and people would ask you, give you responsibility to lead things? Or?
Well, much to my surprise, I was made head boy in OMA Academy. Mm-hmm. I did French, German and English. Uh-huh. Those were my A-level subjects.
Yeah, it's funny, I know somebody who also did French and German A-level and was head boy of a school, not in a fairly similar era.
Okay, all right, I wonder who that might be.
Yeah, I wonder who. If he was in one of the early podcasts. Not me.
I worked that out.
Yeah.
So that was an early example of
how here's a question for you, and I'm not going to divulge my own answer to this question. Well, I think I can see the answer to this question in my own circumstances, but why do you think you were appointed head boy? What do people see?
I have absolutely no idea.
Right,
Looking back, it came as a complete surprise because I wasn't captain of the first 15, uh-huh. and that's normally the person who would have been selected.
Yeah. Okay. But so were you? Did you play sport at all?
I was always the last person to be picked for any team.
Yes.
And even to this day, would shy away from sport involving anybody else. I'll go to the gym and I'll do a workout on the treadmill.
Yeah.
Or occasionally I'll go out for a run, something like that. But the idea of team sport,
that was never part of the feature.
I can remember on one occasion on the rugby pitch being told to go home and play tiddlywinks
with
a few extra words.
Okay.
Had it, will not go there.
So after
obviously, teachers saw something in me at that stage.
You know, maybe a sense of responsibility or something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So after school, then off to university, pursuing languages.
Off to study French and German at Trinity College Dublin. I'd wanted to do law at Queen's, uh-huh. missed it by a grade. Uh-huh. Which was actually a shattering experience at the time because my grades had been very much on target. And it led to a loss of confidence during my first year in Dublin. Uh-huh. But gradually that came back. And as I look back now, it was a decisive turning point in my life.
Why?
I would never have made a good lawyer, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. I really do feel that there was something providential in it, being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
And coming really to enjoy French and German again. Part of my reason for wanting to do law was quite simply to have a change.
Okay, right.
But yeah, but just that real sense, without being able to put it into words, of God having his hand on me. Yes. And probably being away from Northern Ireland.
Yes.
And experiencing life in a different kind of culture in the late 1970s, yes. 1980s was good for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just, you know, wondering what, how, as you look back on it, to what extent was, you know, in what ways was living in Dublin formative? Is that something you've been able to analyse?
Probably having been brought up in the Troubles here, mm. and then going to Dublin, realising that there would have been different kinds of views, that I might have been regarded as much more fundamentalist in Dublin than I would have been here,
yeah.
Wherever here and there is just now, yeah. as I'm talking to
yeah,
you.
Yeah.
But yeah, contrast and, yeah. And being able to examine yourself,
yes.
and ask questions of yourself.
Yeah, I guess getting out of your own immediate mm-hmm. culture does.
And being taken out of your comfort yeah. zone as well.
Yeah. Well, did you have to do, as part of your French and German, did you have to do a year out somewhere or part
that was
of the
optional
year?
For us.
Okay.
I chose yeah. not to, because I was already interested in graduate studies,
okay.
perhaps even going on for the ministry.
So there was already at that point there was
yes.
an interest in,
yes.
in ministry. Mm-hmm. But you didn't go directly into ministry, did you?
No, I didn't. I've mentioned my minister at home, my second minister, as having a very key mentoring role in my life. I had somebody in Trinity who took a similar kind of interest in me, mm-hmm. Professor Edith Zagara, mm-hmm. head of the German department. Mm-hmm. There was a tutor system in the college, mm-hmm. and that meant that I had her one-to-one, mm-hmm. and quite often that led to all kinds of conversations mm-hmm. on a deeper level, far beyond studying Goethe or Schiller or anybody like that,
yeah.
or Thomas Mann. She took a wonderful interest, an exceptional interest in all her students, uh-huh. and made sure that we had careers sorted out.
Really?
Or graduate studies
next
somewhere.
Steps anyway,
and she
yeah.
suggested to me that I should apply to Oxford. Mm-hmm. And by the way, Ida, I'm still in touch with her. She came to the opening night of the General Assembly
really?
Last year. She's in her early 80s now. Yeah. Absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
A lady of faith herself.
Yeah.
She did the Dublin Marathon when she was 75 and would
Fantastic.
Say that the combined age of her legs then was 150. But again, yeah. a strong figure in
yeah.
my life who made a difference.
Yeah.
She encouraged me to apply to Oxford and then yeah. was accepted to read Modern European History at St Antony's.
Modern European History. That was a bit of a shift off the language there. What had happened to shift your perspective?
Because Trinity was based on seminars
yeah.
and I found myself choosing history-related mm-hmm. topics.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the periods I studied specifically was Germany, 1945 mm-hmm. to 1949, that mm-hmm. immediate post-war period.
Yeah.
So yes, an interest in history.
Well, did either Dublin or Oxford mean, you know, sort of a parenthesis on your Presbyterianism? Where, you know, I'm thinking Oxford, for example. I can't imagine there are very many Presbyterian churches in Oxford. Were you involved then in other traditions or streams?
Sometimes I say that you don't need to be Presbyterian to get to heaven, but why take a chance? And of course, you can apply that to any denomination.
Fill in your selected denomination. Probably everybody thinks like that, don't they, about
Absolutely.
Their own?
Absolutely. Yes, going to Dublin and then in particular to Oxford, St. Antony's had a small community of Christian students.
Uh-huh.
So suddenly I was meeting a very devout Argentinian Catholic at the time of the Falklands War.
Wow.
Yes. A lady from an American Catholic background, people from a French Reformed background, Anglicans right across the spectrum.
Uh-huh.
So again, that helped tease out certain perspectives and gave me a much wider
yeah.
approach. During my second year, I actually stayed in a Russian Orthodox center.
Really?
Which was amazing. Mm-hmm. The warden, high Anglican,
mm-hmm.
and watching him officiate at a communion service on one occasion really upset my Presbyterian sensitivities, because that was totally beyond anything that I'd ever experienced. Yeah. But I suppose as time has gone on and looking back over my own journey, I hope I've now arrived at the stage where I'm confident of who I am in Jesus yes. Christ, and therefore can reach out to others yes. and be enriched by what they have to show yeah. me.
Do you think that it's an insecurity or a lack of clarity of identity that makes people maybe very defensive, or the temptation to put up fences? And you know, you meet a fellow Christian, and you want to very quickly mark it. Well, what are you? You know, and where they stand on certain buzz issues. Do you think that having a strong sense of who you are in Christ then is a way of being able to not feel threatened or not feel the need to put up fences?
Yeah. Well, if Christ hadn't broken down barriers to reach me, I wouldn't have been brought into his kingdom. Mm-hmm. And there is that sense of being secure of who we are, but yes, then reaching out in that mm-hmm. basis to others. Mm-hmm. Labels are still very important to us in this part of the world.
Yes,
but they are only secondary to who we are in yeah. Jesus Christ. And yeah. again, I probably have reached that stage mm-hmm. of saying that it is who I am in him that is of ultimate importance, that sense of identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, sorry. I suppose, appreciating that others can actually have a slightly different point of view yeah. to me, believe
yeah.
it or not.
Yeah. yeah. What was happening then to the sense of ministry calling? Was that bubbling away at this point when you were at Oxford?
Just to go back to sure. Oxford, I attended the local United Reformed Church, yeah. which was, I suppose, similar to Presbyterianism. Yeah. If I were to go back now, probably it would be to a place like St Aldate's or St right. Ebbs.
Yes.
Wasn't quite ready for all of that yeah. just then. Mm-hmm. And the URC would have probably been more reflective of a more traditional kind of Presbyterian
yeah.
background. The minister there was a man called Carol Micklem.
Mm-hmm.
His way of articulating spoken prayer, mm-hmm. public prayer, mm-hmm. had a very deep impact on me, and he has actually published a couple of prayer books.
Okay, spell his name for folks.
Carol Micklem, Caryl, and yeah. then Micklem, Micklem.
Okay, and he's published some books.
Couple of books specifically on prayer.
Okay. So, yeah.
And then a small community of students there, and that would have been part of my fellowship mm-hmm. and friendship group
mm-hmm. okay.
and supporting one another.
Mm-hmm.
But no sooner had I started Oxford in September 1982 when I really felt like a boat being tossed around at sea.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only when I totally surrendered to the Lord in terms of call, in terms of ministry, that I found a deep, deep peace that has never left me.
So was that a battle that you were sensing call, but there was resistance to it? I'm not sure if I was really resisting it,
okay. but it was God speaking to me very clearly and very...
Right. Can you tease out a little bit what you mean by this idea of a boat being tossed around? Was that external circumstances, or was it just a sort of sense of inner unsettledness?
Inner unsettledness.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
God having his hand on me, mm-hmm. and I probably went through... there probably was some resistance, because I went through a phase of absolutely loathing clerical colours. Remember that? Wanting to run a million miles.
Uh-huh. And we should clarify for the listeners that... there is no sign of a clerical collar in this room.
Yes, they come and go a bit. I've probably had to wear collars much more often over this past year as moderator.
I dare say. Yeah. But sorry, no, back to this sense of, I suppose I would almost call it a crucible of a call experience.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us
mm-hmm.
a little bit more then about that.
Yes, I can't put it in any other way. Mm-hmm. It was God very much at work in my life.
Mm-hmm.
that call, I suppose, that had always been on my life right from early days, and now it was coming to a crisis of decision.
Yeah.
And once I'd made that decision, I found that peace.
Yeah.
A peace that has never, ever left me.
Wonderful, wonderful. And was that a sense of God is calling you to local church, vocational local church ministry? Yeah. I always like to again talk around that a little bit. Some people are listening, and the whole issue of the call, you know, there are various views on that. How did you know? How did God make it clear that that's what he wanted you to do?
Again, as I've just said, as soon as I surrendered, that sense of transcendent peace.
Which is a kind of confirmation in retrospect, isn't it?
Yes.
Until you've made that decision.
But it's great being able to look
absolutely
back
and
see God's hand at work.
Absolutely. And I think someone, I'm not, was it Dallas Willard, maybe said that we often discern God's hand in the rearview mirror, you know.
And when you're old like us,
that's right,
can look in the rear mirror.
That's right.
step by step.
That's right. That's right. And did that then mean that did you still see your graduate studies through at Oxford, or did you get up and leave and go and do something else?
I did. I did my master's on the Nazi seizure of power and how it was portrayed by the local newspaper press in a town called Dortmund, but that's another story.
Really? Right.
I carried some of those studies back with me to Union Theological College.
Yeah.
I began my BD studies, my studies for the ministry,
right,
in the autumn of 1984.
Right. Okay, so were you still...
So I was carrying two degrees for a little while.
Okay,
Until I got the Oxford part of it landed and out of the way.
Yeah. So Union then, what was that? What was that like, studying there?
Again, we'll apply the rear view mirror.
Yes.
It was a very formative time for me. A great exposure, I would say, to evangelical truth and the passion and the fervor of so many contemporaries. Friendships that were formed at the deepest possible level, and lecturers who showed Christian grace and character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great summary of that. Were there friendships and ministry fellowship that developed at that time that you've been able to maintain that for the last 30 plus years?
Hopefully so. Yes, Clark of the General Assembly, Trevor Gribben, was my best man.
Okay.
So it's lovely working alongside him at the moment.
Yes, so presumably you work very closely this year. Yeah.
He always says that when moderators come to the end of their year, there's the danger of them going off message and not following his instructions, so I need to be very careful at this stage.
And then after that, you're into local church ministries. So that means, in terms of working career, this has really been your working career has been ministry.
I have an uncle in County Tyrone. He's a retired farmer, and he always likes to say to me that I've never done a day's work in my life. But no real life experience other than church, I suppose.
That's what I mean. So what were the stages then, stages of church ministry? Where have you been?
I was assigned to Harmony Hill Lambeg as assistant minister, and again, a very strong leader, a man called Harold Gray, who had a great influence, incredibly well organised, a great pastor's heart, and a good, steady pair of hands, and always very easy to talk to, tremendous listening ear, and somebody who really encouraged me and offered me endless guidance.
Right.
Harmony Hill is a very distinctive building.
Yes, I know it.
Yes.
I grew up in Lisburn. And
so congregation sits facing the pulpit and the communion table. No matter where you sit, you're facing the There are blocks of seats,
right.
If I put it like this. Yeah. No matter where you sit, you're not looking at the back of somebody's head, you're looking at somebody's face.
Oh, really?
So there's that sense of family together.
Yeah.
Symbolic,
yes.
Also significant.
Odd question, but what's it like preaching in that? Then are you?
Well, you have to turn your head to the right and then to the left, okay, and then look forward.
Okay, yeah. But it's not 300. It's not 360 degrees.
No,
no, right. It's not quite. That would be a feat to have to preach. Have you ever preached in a situation where you had to turn 360 degrees?
I haven't.
No,
no.
Neither have I. But I'm sure it does happen. So after that would be a 2-year thing. Is that right?
Yes, and quite interestingly, I became eligible in January 1990, was interested for some reason in a congregation called Legacurry, quite near Lisburn, which was about to become vacant. Mm-hmm. Don't ask me how or why, maybe even at that stage the name appealed to me because there's a Legacurry near where I was brought up,
I'm not
quite sure.
Yeah.
On the 15th of January 1990, my year group became eligible, and it was amazing how quickly the Holy Spirit had moved by the 16th of January and the number of calls that were suddenly issued.
Yeah.
But my...
This is like the ecclesiastical transfer window, is it?
Yes, that's okay. Right. But you weren't supposed to be in conversation until the 15th of January.
See, I see what you mean.
And then all of a sudden, these guys...
People are being tapped up.
I didn't fall into that category, he said self-righteously. Legacurry was just becoming vacant or about to become vacant, and it was the one place that I held out for, and it wouldn't leave me. Let me tell you a couple of stories about that. There was a lady assigned to succeed me in Harmony Hill, and Kennedy was her name, from Westchurch, Bangor, as it turned out. My wife-to-be, I still hadn't met Barbara by that stage, she knew Anne, but didn't know me.
Uh-huh.
And because I was staying on in Harmony Hill, Anne had to be reassigned, and then Barbara gave off about this selfish good-for-nothing guy staying on in the church and denying her good friend the place. So that's interesting. And then...
you can't leave it there.
I'll come back to that.
Okay.
During the summer, I was living in Beechdean Drive in Lisburn. Went out to the back of the house over lunch, something that I wouldn't normally have done. I'd had a conversation that morning with a friend who mentioned another congregation to me that was vacant, and he said that I ought to apply for there because Legacurry was really going to take quite a bit of time, and that seemed to be a sensible suggestion all of a sudden. So there I was, I'd gone out to the back of the house, got into a conversation with my neighbour, and out of the blue, this is absolutely amazing, she said, Legacurry is the congregation for you. I certainly wouldn't apply for. And she named the other place.
How did she know?
I have no idea.
Wow, goodness me.
Yeah,
yeah. Did you see did you see this neighbour any other day than that?
No.
And you're sure it was an actual neighbour? It wasn't an angelic visitation or something like that?
I'm sure it was my neighbour. But surely God can speak to us in all kinds of ways.
Of course he can. That's remarkable.
And that whole call process was a bit like falling head over heels in love. It just wouldn't go away.
Yeah.
And finally, towards the end of that year, I received a call.
But that's a calendar year spent then waiting for that. That was that hard to wait then? Or had you a sense God is...
Looking back again, Alan, there's almost a sense of recklessness having all your eggs in the one basket.
Quite.
But it seemed right to do.
Yeah, yeah. So then Legacurry wasn't... What about this person who'd written you off as this, you know, you blocked her friend... going to Harmony Hill. How did that get resolved? You need to tell us that. We're almost at the end of this episode here, so don't leave the listeners wondering what happened here. Let's talk about this, and then we'll pick up your story next time in Legacurry.
Well, Barbara had trained as a teacher. She was in Glasgow High in the Arts Peninsula for a couple of years, then went overseas with the Presbyterian Church to teach English in China. She returned home to take up a post with Tear Funds as its first full-time youth worker in Ireland.
Oh, right.
She had bought a house in East Belfast, which she was sharing with a mutual friend. Mm-hmm. The two of them put their heads together to get a dinner party sorted out, and I was invited along as number 8, simply to make up numbers. That coincided with the General Assembly. Mm-hmm. Barbara was attending it as the Tear Fund rep. Mm-hmm. Looked across the entire room, having spotted me or worked out who I was, gave me a big smile, and I looked over my shoulder to see who it was she was looking at. Anyhow, to cut a long story short, we started going out at the end of September, were engaged within 5 weeks, and married at the beginning of the following May, and I'm normally a very cautious person.
Oh, right, okay. Was that in 1991?
Yes.
Okay, right. So all of that then, around this time of being called, mm-hmm. So all that's going on as well. Quite a dramatic phase in your life. Charles, listen, we're going to leave it there for this week's episode. Thank you. We'll come back next time. We'll get you and Barbara installed in Leg of Curry, hear what happened there and how your journey's continued since.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Leadership Journey podcast. Charles will be back with us next week. He'll be talking more about his leadership journey. You can join us then to hear more of the story. And in the meantime, have a good week.